flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chicago, are you
yelling?
The Bergstein and Harris Show, middays 10 till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Everyone get back to work. Listen, thank you so much. My family and I, we are beyond excited. This is exactly where we wanted to be.
Woo-hoo!
Exactly where we want to be.
Is everyone exactly where they're supposed to be right now? Or we're figuring this out. Ben Johnson's definitely where he wants to be. You know how I know that? One, he took the job. Two, we know how much he's making. A lot. He's got his coaches coming in, nice and like off a conveyor belt, putting them in place.
Yeah, like the Wonka Chocolate Factory with the everlasting Gobstoppers showing up.
I was like, what was the video game with the hamburger where you make the hamburgers?
Burger Time?
Burger Time, yeah. Burger Time.
Burger Time is a Pac-Man. Or it's a combination of like Pac-Man and the second level of Donkey Kong.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Because you have to go over things and you get this salt shaker will freeze the things that are coming after you. I always thought that was a very derivative game that wasn't worth a quarter.
Well, my man Ben Johnson is getting things together. And, you know, everyone is optimistic about the future and what it holds. And I got to tell you, the euphoria that rolled over this city, not only with the news of the Ben Johnson hiring, but also when he stepped to the mic. And I guess this really says something about the attitude of the city, is that people were waiting with bated breath to see exactly how that was going to go.
Well, a lot of us were just like, please don't be an idiot. Please don't say anything stupid. Please don't make us worried. It was probably the best rollout press conference of a Bears head coach that I can remember.
And as you get the details from his agent, who we'll have on this program tomorrow at noon, correct?
Yeah, Rick Smith is going to join us tomorrow at noon. He did a podcast interview. We're going to bring back some of it a little bit in the last hour of the show. Super nice guy, really smart.
So all this plays out, and I'm wondering in my head, okay, so how long does this last? And when I say this, I mean, how long does this euphoric feeling of goodness, and is it a week? Is it 2 weeks? Is it a month? And I think I've come up with an answer. It lasts until free agency officially begins, and it's either going to go up or it's going to go down. It's at a we have a new baseline right now. With
are you saying for Ben Johnson excitement or overall Bears excitement?
I think the two are they are synonymous at this point. Who's the front man for the Bears?
Yeah, but is anybody really going to pin it on him if the Bears don't dive big into this free agency and say, well, because it's because of him? I don't think he's going to bear the brunt of that.
I'm not. Here's what we know. We know that this is not a great draft class for offensive linemen, correct?
Correct.
That has been established. It is held. It has not changed. You know, usually throughout the season, oh, this guy has really picked it up. And, you know, even combine, when's the combine? It's not that far away, but I just think this high
April,
that
April, right? Is that what
it is? Yeah, I think it's April. This high that we have right now, I just want to know how long it can last. And I think it can only last till free agency
the
starts.
The scouting combine starts on February 27th. April is like the draft.
Yeah, April's right, the draft itself.
Right, right. So that's the combo. Senior Bowl's now.
Yes.
So they're already
later this week.
They're already at work.
Yes.
I mean, it's the practices that matter more than the game, too. This is the week.
Nothing's going to bring down the Ben Johnson high this week or even the next week because nothing's going to happen of substance. You know? It's only when players can be brought in and then we can get in back on our off-season train. And I think free agency is when it's going to come, not crashing
See,
down.
See, I don't think so. I disagree.
You think it's going to last?
Yes. I think it's going to last through maybe even multiple losses.
Oh.
That's how big a deal this is. That's how much rope he's got. That's how much goodwill and political capital is being built up for him right now.
In this city where...
Yep. Yep.
Skepticism is always skeptical.
I think that he would have to, from what we just lived through, absolute in front of your face in the moment obvious incompetence that became a national laughingstock. I think it's going to take a lot more than just an underwhelming free agency period to take the bloom off any of this. I also, after hearing from him, I think it could get even better.
Tell me how that happens.
I think get even better. I think based on with every opportunity, it's the opposite of Eberflus, where anytime he's in front of a microphone, you'd cringe. And anytime he'd sit down for an interview, you'd cringe.
But that speaks more to how low the standard has been.
But it speaks to Ben Johnson's ability, his comfort in his own skin, his security in who he is. I think it could get even better. This is me talking. That was just, like you say, that's the first date that went that well. And we could get into an extended period here where the love affair heats up. I mean, don't underestimate the upside of what's possible because of how desperate we are to actually have something good that we somehow don't self-sabotage and we somehow don't say, well, we don't deserve this. Why would he pick us? And I know all these pathologies really well. And I actually think that depending on how he talks to players during training camp and how they look, once they get on the field, we start looking at rookie mini camps and OTAs. It is not going to be long before there are Bears running around in their underpants out there in 7-on-7s making plays on air. And we're gushing about the athleticism and the creative play design and all that.
This is a major heel turn. Because I have never heard you speak with so much optimism about the Bears.
I'd call it a face turn then rather than a heel turn. I think it's the opposite. But it's not. But it's not like that. That to say it's a heel turn or a face turn would presume that it's an act. I don't think it's an act.
I think you believe what you're saying. I just can't believe what you're saying.
All I can ever do is try to be as honest as I can is about how I feel right now. And I think based on that initial rollout, which was unlike anything we'd ever seen from the Bears, certainly in recent memory, that this guy's got every chance to take it from here and be even bigger. Because I remember how it went down with Matt Nagy. People were super excited. And when he threw out the first pitch at the Cubs game and threw a 75-mile-an-hour strike, and people were like looking around like, yeah.
We got our guy.
Look at this guy.
And he's ready to do whatever.
People, just don't forget, Matt Nagy owned this city, man. People loved him. He had everything.
And then?
and then it was bad. And that happens. So we can't wait to fall in love. We can't wait. We're that guy. We're like my college roommate who always had to have a girlfriend he was in love with. Always.
Maybe he really was in love in that moment.
He probably was. I mean, you hang up first. No, you hang up first. Like, one of you better hang it up right now. I'm hanging you both up. Get off the damn phone.
So, wow. You don't think, Dan Bernstein, a hater of love.
No, I'm a lover of sleep. Get off the phone.
This is like in a dorm room where you're both sleeping in the same exact room. Oh, okay.
No, you hang up first. Ugh. Please.
I take it you were single at the time.
I was single until I was married.
Listen, that's one way to be. That's probably the way I'm going to be at this point. I'm leaning into that.
Yes, and that was the 847. That was the day that when Matt Nagy sang the stretch, he said, buy me some penis and Cracker Jacks. Yes, that is true.
That's accurate?
That's accurate.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
That was that same day. We were all looking at each other.
Oh, yeah. Does that predate you, Marshall? That was a thing.
That does predate me, and I'm glad you brought it back so I can have some contextual understanding.
Yeah, we were there. We were sitting there, and I look at Parkinson. I'm sitting there having a beer, and we're like, look at this guy. And we're like, yeah, he said penis.
You know, that's a hell of a prize to find in the Cracker Jack box, I'll tell you that. Whoa!
Hey, we've made all those jokes. And it's true. When Nagy showed up to the game dressed with a George Halas-style fedora, and the first play he ran, the T formation, as an homage to the Halas Bears. And the trick plays and Willy Wonka and Santa's sleigh and all that stuff. We're going crazy over that. What was the name of that big tight end we all loved after he caught that one? I forgot. He's probably out of football.
He was
now a
lineman at the time, and then they tried to make him a tight end briefly because they didn't have another tight end after
Bradley Sowell.
That's it.
Bradley, I know you got soul. Yes.
Listen, I'm not doubting that the optimism can't be there and carry over and continue. I'm just telling you what my 3.5-year snapshot of Chicago has been. The skepticism, the pessimism, and in many cases, that's bled over into just straight up pragmatism of the reality of professional sports in Chicago, led by the team that plays at Soldier Field. Yeah, I'm not talking about the Fire.
But we're suckers for falling in love. We are. We're suckers for hope. And I think this has got room to burn before people start saying, well, I don't know about this Ben Johnson guy.
I told you
they shouldn't hire a guy with no experience.
I'm not saying it's going to be like that. I'm just saying it's not going to be as high as it is right now.
Remember, I said this.
Okay.
I still think there is room for this stock to run.
Dan Bernstein and his cynicism taking a break.
I'm just being honest. And I'm not endorsing his absolute success as a futures head coach. I'm just telling you, I'm pretty good about understanding the feelings of Bears fans in this city. And we go out of our way to find reasons to get excited about off seasons specifically because they're so much better than actual seasons.
That is something I have seen play out. And I'm kind of with that. The honeymoon's going to last, according to you.
Yep.
I don't think it can last as long as you're saying.
I think it's just starting.
You're saying we're going to make it to the regular season with this same level of hype into it.
If they get a couple wins, watch out. Watch out.
So people, if they start 4-2, it's going to be a different type of 4-2?
If they go out in their first game and they win by 20 points,
and I'm in here in a snuggie,
like a dominant win. If they get a dominant win in week one, the hype is going to go off the rails.
Oh my! Are you kidding? By the start of the fourth quarter, he'll have a restaurant. you won't even know. You'll wake up one morning and it's Ben Johnson's Steakhouse is going to be right down here on the corner. I'm telling you, we can't wait. And yes, it is true. Right after he sang the stretch, remember Mitch? It's like, well, you can play it, but don't play it too much. Or each show can play it only twice. And he put a limit.
I think it was three times.
Was it three times per show that we could actually play him sing the stretch?
Wait, oh, there's a limit?
There was. It was some sort of, I don't know how they could, they talk to like the lawyers or something, like, well, it can't be considered over the top. And saying, you know, you, it's, you can use it. It's news, but we have to have some discretion.
I'm already getting some of the pessimism right here. 626, Bears 2026, under 500, no playoffs, same old, same old.
Maybe, but that's not what we're debating.
Yeah. That's a long ways. Listen, if it lasts till 2026, everybody's happy because that means you had a good 2025 before things broke down.
Uncle Luke got me hooked on Hennessy, so thank you to Uncle Luke.
Let me see you pop them things, shake them noodle bread.
You know that music means it's time to talk to Jarrett Payton, so let's do it. He's on Twitter, at Payton Sun, S-U-N, WGN-TV Sports Anchor, GN Sports. He is with us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. Hello, Jarrett. Now that we've had a chance to meet these coordinators, do you have any thoughts, any reactions?
Well, first and foremost, hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Always great to talk to you, Dan and Marshall.
What's up, Jared?
Yeah, listen, I'm excited. I'm like everybody else, waiting for football to get back here so we can see how this all kind of gets in shape and how it all kind of start forming. Right? I mean, everything looks good right now. It's kind of like that honeymoon period, and everybody's excited. We've been here before, but I do feel like this is different. I was just having this conversation. I was on a meeting with my mom and my sister just a little bit ago, and when I was talking to someone outside of our family, I was like, I'm like, this is different. My mom's like, why is this different? Why is this different? I'm like, this is my sister. She's like, you always are saying the same thing.
Good
Jared.
Question.
Always saying,
good.
I get you. I said, but this is the feeling of the everything all encompassing when we talk about having the number one quarterback that was drafted here to Chicago. That hasn't happened. Still, you still got to figure out how to get Caleb Williams to peak performance and take him to the next level. Totally understand that. But also when it comes to the head coach that everybody wanted, like, we haven't done this before. And I said, Mom, I told her, I've been saying this to a lot of people. I would say about 95% of the people that I was talking to leading into this process, Ben Johnson's name was the first to come up. They were like, I want Ben Johnson. We want Ben Johnson. I'm like, cool. Guess what? Kevin Warren, the McCaskies, and Ryan Pulse, they delivered. They delivered on this. Now it's for them to be able to give him all the resources that he needs to be successful. And if it doesn't work, I was like, Bears fans, don't be upset with anybody else. Don't be upset anymore. You got it. Like, you got what you wanted. Now we got to see if it all plays itself out, right? I mean, a lot of people, I remember with Matt Eberflus, that wasn't the guy that they wanted. We can go Matt Eberflus, whoever you want to. You can think about the names still. Now you got the guy. He's got to prove himself, but this is kind of what the consensus wanted. Now we got to see if it all plays itself out.
So I just want to know how your mom reacted to that when you gave her the explanation.
She wasn't on board, was she? She did. She was on board. She wasn't happy at first when I first started out, but it is what it is. I said, man, I lived this life, Mom. She's like, I lived it too in the 70s and 80s. I was like, well, you are right. Let me scale back just a little bit. But I'm hoping it's different, fellas. It just feels different. Dennis Allen, I think we were talking even with the conversations before this became official. I mean, just his title and what he's done, when you look at his resume, it does. It gives Ben Johnson another sounding board when there's some things that he might not understand or things that he might have questions about that he can go to. And everybody that I've talked to that has a connection with Ben Johnson says they all say the same things. And so these are people that I respect. These are people that he's talked about and Ben Johnson's talked about, John Shoup. All these guys had great conversations. They all say the exact same thing. And I think that's what excites me, because these are people that I trust.
From a player's perspective, Jarrett, what is the proper tone and an amount of outreach from a new coaching staff to players? Whether if you are a player and you know you're likely to be on the roster, not some fringe guy, but you know you're on the team under contract, what is the right way for the coach to text you, or for the new positional coach? What do you want to hear? What do you not want to hear?
Man, Dan, it's funny, right? Because I was one of those guys that was – I was just trying to make it, so I don't know if I was getting that text message, well, you know?
I don't know if they had texting back then either, but put yourself in the...
Wow, you didn't need to do that. Hey, you didn't need... That was unnecessary.
No. Dan's right. I mean, it was still beginning. I mean, Jeff Fisher and I were really close in Tennessee, but I got a phone call from him, and this was like through the process of trying to make the team. And when I got cut one time, I was at dinner downtown. I was celebrating that I made the team, because I didn't get any phone calls yet. And I got a phone call at dinner. Somebody goes,
"Oh no,
you have a phone call." Yeah,
that
I found out
sucks.
Then.
Sucks.
Right when I
when
right
you're
when
at
I was
dinner.
About to, yeah, bro. I was.
Oh.
I was on a nice little dinner date. You know what I mean? We were celebrating. I just got everything. I was like, you know, we had the drinks come in, buying the big steaks and all that stuff. And then I was like, oh, are you for real right now? Seriously? So I've been on that side. But if I was one of these guys, I just want to hear kind of whoever the position coach is, whoever's reaching out to me, saying what's up. And then also too, just being like, if I'm one of those guys that's on this team, you know, back and forth, how do you see me fitting in? Because that's what Ben Johnson kind of talked about. And I don't know if everybody has the same philosophy yet, because not everybody's been together on this coaching staff. But Ben seems like he wants to bring the best out of you as a football player. And to me, that's what I want to know. Coach, how are you going to help me take my game to the next level? Because that's everybody's got to be able to buy in. And I heard you guys talking about buying in earlier. You got to be able to buy in to be successful. And everybody's got to play their role. But everybody's got to get better. Everybody has to get better. And Dennis Allen was talking about that, about, you know, everybody's a teacher, and you have to find a way to elevate these guys' games and what you have on the roster. That's what's different in this situation to me when it comes to the head coach. He comes in not from a system, not from somebody else's tree and somebody else's offense, but he is going to build this offense around his quarterback. And I think that's what jumps out to me about Ben Johnson more than all the coaches that came before him, is that Matt Nagy and all these guys, it was, here's the offense, find a way to fit into the offense. If it doesn't, then you're out of here. Where Ben Johnson comes in, it's so refreshing, saying we're going to build this thing around our players. That's what excites me the most. This is his system. He built it. He's one of one. Like, he's a one of one. And so if you can't get excited about that, then I don't know. You must not have a pulse.
We're talking with Jarrett Payton on the Bernstein and Harris Show, middays 10 to 2 here on The Score. I also want to know how they plan to communicate. All of these smart people, or ostensibly smart people, who are here to help translate, communicate, and facilitate Ben Johnson's mind meld with Caleb Williams. Is this a time where less is more? Is this a time where Caleb's got to show up at work and say, okay, well, who's my boss this morning? Who's my boss this afternoon? Through whose eyes am I seeing all this? Or is this an actual personal Ben Johnson project?
Oh, Dan, I've been thinking, and you, Marshall, I was listening earlier when you guys were talking about the reports about, you know, adding a voice for Caleb, right?
Right.
And I've also heard what Olin said. Like, I heard, like, yep. It's like, don't even, it's not about, this needs to be him and Ben. I think too many chefs in the kitchen always could be a problem. I'm not sure how everybody's role with, you know, passing game coordinator and all this stuff. I think the relationship with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams is going to be crucial for the success of helping him unlock those doors to the next level of his game. And I think that's the person that we all kind of envisioned that he was going to be around. That's not always that can't. It's going to be tough because Ben has not only to run this offense, but he also has to be able to run this football team. And that's the one of the big question marks. And we thought the big hurdles of coming from just being an offensive coordinator to a head coach now and running a team. So the time limit that he has to being around Caleb, he's going to have to etch out his time and do it wisely to be able to have as much time with Caleb as possible. So I think it's yet to be seen. I feel like he needs to be around Caleb more. And I want him to be that voice because he's the one from all the conversations of talking to these people that know Ben. They talk about how he's helped change these quarterbacks' lives of being around a guy like Jared Goff of like the conversations. But that was different when you're in Detroit. It's going to be different now, but having guys like JT Barrett that actually played, I love how he's bringing guys on this coaching staff that have played the game of football. And I think that guys that are respected when you look at the way that they came played the game of football, because I think that's going to be big, but Ben's voice is going to have to be prevalent in his ears, but also as well, teaching what he wants around this coaching staff to be able to them to be his voice as well. And that's going to be something we're going to have to watch.
So we're learning about these coordinators today. There's still jobs available on this coaching staff. And the one that obviously is jumping out at a lot of people right now, that offensive line coaching job, how concerned are you about them getting this thing sealed, wrapped, delivered, and getting started on figuring out what they need?
Marshall, man, you saw my video I posted on Instagram, man. It's all about the offensive line. I've been preaching that, and I know everybody else has here at Chicago. It's about finding ways to dominate on the line of scrimmage. And I think the only way for Ben Johnson to kind of bring some of the things that we saw in Detroit here is to be able to win up front. The only way I believe to be able to truly help Caleb is to win up front, to have a strong run game, to see those things and see if we can mirror those things from Detroit to here. I think it's getting that right, getting the coach right, getting the offensive line fixed is going to be the key of success for how fast on the offensive side they can get this thing going in the right direction. And I don't know. We know that you can change things in an off season, but this offensive line needs help, and I'm banking on that. You get the coach right to then be able to kind of reset the minds of the guys that you bring in to the guys that you have on the roster that you're keeping. All that stuff has to kind of mirror in the fight, because I look at Jaden Daniels and coming into the season, this season, right? A lot of people weren't giving the Commanders a lot of love on their offensive line, but they figured it out. Guys bought in. They showed the way. Because I look at their system, they didn't run the football a lot, so a lot of pressure was on Jaden Daniels to throw the football. And the only reason why I know that they don't run the ball a lot is because, man, when you look at those prop bets every single week, man, none of those guys were getting any yards. Yards weren't there, so a lot was put on his shoulders. That goes to what Cliff Kingsbury and that system that they put around Jaden to be able to be successful. It could be done. I just don't know how fast it gets done here.
We've got a couple minutes left at most here, Jarrett, but does it matter that an NFL offensive coordinator didn't play football?
No, I'm past that. Okay. And I get where you're. I used to be like that.
No, I try to not be like that.
No, it's a valid question though, right? Because that's where we're all wondering it, and we're listening to him talk. But he's not calling plays. I think if he called plays, I'd probably have a little more concern.
Yes, I would. Damn, I'm so glad you asked that, though, Dan, because that's how I was back in the day. It was like, well, you didn't play, so you didn't. No, it's not about that. These guys are they're students of the game, and they find ways you can be in this game without having played the game and just being around some of the brilliant minds that you're around. Anytime that you're around a person like Sean Payton, I mean, I've just been around him in certain settings and just learning football around him. I can only imagine if you're in meeting rooms or you're around in a facility and what you can learn. If you're smart enough to understand this game and love this game, you can learn how to be able to teach the game as well, especially from brilliant minds. So I'm with you, though, Marshall. I think it maybe would be a little bit more. I'd be concerned if you were calling plays, but as of right now, that's not the case.
Jared Payton, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Jared.
Always, guys. I'll see you guys.
That is Jared Payton talking Chicago Bears with us, and you should be watching him on WGN.
Bernstein and Harris.
Really excited for you and Marshall together.
Middays, Tindall 2.
Love Marshall, love his work, man, so I'm excited for that pairing.
I don't want to blow Dan Bernstein's mind right now.
Yeah, do that, please.
Do it.
But I'm going to.
Yes.
This was the best process I've seen in a heck of a long time from any team in the National Football League.
Wow, how about it?
All right.
Somebody's been listening. Somebody knows us. And yes, by the way, that was indeed a Grateful Dead hat that he had on.
He was just so, I don't know, I guess transparent is the word. I had listened to the podcast and the interview on the Bears Banner podcast, so like I understood his temperament, what it was likely to be, but he would just, you asked him questions, he told us what he could tell. The one he couldn't quite get into super details about, for obvious reasons.
Sure. But look, we know. He made it pretty clear when he was asking the tough questions that he, as a longtime Bears observer, would have for his client. Essentially, you're asking, what's been wrong with you?
Yep.
Have you stopped being weird?
Listen, and they had answers. And they had answers to the degree which he could go back to his client and say, yeah, we're good here. And I think the takeaway from this is very simple. Hate Kevin Warren all you want, you Kevin Warren naysayers, politician, whatever, however you want to frame him as from your experiences listening to him, watching him talk. That man is responsible for getting Ben Johnson in the building, one, but also from an overview standpoint, bringing the Bears into this century when it comes to how NFL teams are supposed to function and be run.
We just heard two press conferences earlier today from organizations that have really, I think, displayed dysfunction. One with new ownership in Shad Khan, new-ish, with Shad Khan and the Jaguars, and then another one with Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. And Rick Smith represents not only Ben Johnson, but Dan Campbell. And I asked the question last week to Ann Heron, who had played for the Lions, how difficult it was for the Lions to be able to make this wholesale change that was actually sustainable. They had to lean into their shame. They can't do the whole, this isn't us. That absolutely was them. And it took the person in charge to change, whether that is ownership or the one who acts as ownership.
Well, it took,
and that's what happened here. So then Smith details to you that the person closest to ownership to convince them to change, and credit to the Bears ownership for changing and accepting it, was Kevin Warren. The people in the room had to make this happen. Yes, that is a Hamilton reference.
There's a lot of reaction coming in, excuse me, via Twitch and via social media and the text line as well. And the 847 here says, after all the Trace Armstrong PTSD, hearing Rick Smith was like a breakthrough therapy session. Yeah, I can understand that. And I like this email, too. This is from our data guy, Spencer. And he said, I've heard a lot of surprise about how forthright Rick Smith has been in his business with Johnson and the Bears. Why might he so notably go against convention? Here's my theory. The Bears have been developing a reputation of organizational incompetence, and it's starting to waft into the national perception as players come into the organization and the reputation continues. It's been difficult for them to shake. But Ben Johnson's first task is to inspire confidence in the organization's assets so they buy into the vision. So you can't blame players for being wary of the organization. The Bears have to convince them otherwise. Smith works for Ben Johnson. He has a financial interest in Johnson being successful, even after the ink has dried. He's just saying the Bears front office is professional. They inspired confidence. They're committed to becoming a winning organization. And he's calling out the recent changes that they made. Kevin Warren, notable among them, responsible for a new direction. This is him saying it's not the same old Bears, and the message rings more sincere. He said Smith might have been entirely honest in his appraisal of the Bears organization, but he's also helping his client by relaying this message to stakeholders inside and outside of Hallis Hall. I agree, but I also know him well enough to know that that's nothing you heard there was disingenuous, dishonest, or trying to sell you something.
Well, I agree as well, but I think the bottom line is if you wanted the Bears as an organization to change, something had to give. Kevin Warren made them give, I think to the tune of about $13 million, if I'm not mistaken. And so I think two things can be true, but I'm leaning more into the Kevin Warren not only got this right, but also Ryan Poles has been absolved of some of his past transgressions, if you will, because of the way he was able to pull together, get the coach that they wanted. And now we'll see, like the jury is still very much out on both those guys, as in Kevin Warren and Ryan Poles, because one, I don't see shovels in the ground anywhere. That's one. Two, I don't know what this roster is going to look like next season. And I have a lot of texters saying, well, if Kevin Warren's so great, why did Matt Eberflus stay last year? There were reasons to keep Matt Eberflus.
Still has a boss.
No, yeah. Kevin Warren made mistakes.
Is not the owner of the Bears.
Yeah, you can make mistakes. It's how quickly you correct the mistakes. And I think just the fact that they did something they'd never been done before in firing a coach in season shows that there has been progress made. It's not going to be an overnight thing, but I think we can all agree that progress has been made in the last calendar year for the Bears.
This bought them a lot of capital. Sure. This bought Kevin Warren a ton of capital. This bought Ryan Poles some capital. I would argue that I think the question deserves to be asked, do you even feel differently about his running of the stadium project because of this? Because I do think that that matters to a lot of fans. Notably, you remember the quote from Lori Lightfoot saying that they should focus on winning and beating the Packers. I feel like this reflects a lot of that fan base. A move like this not only instills confidence in the football side, it instills confidence in the business side as well. Like you make the two right decisions, right? Quarterback and head coach, you've bought yourself a winning football team.
Amen. But you say it sends a message not just to the fans, but potential business partners and anybody actually daring to believe, because we've been burned so many times. And I think it speaks to people like me, like, yeah, well, it's just Bears are getting another coach. They're doing this again. They're doing what they do every few years, and we get excited about it. And I will continue to say, I don't know how good a head coach Ben Johnson is going to be. I know he's had a great start. And I know he checks the boxes, and he seems smart. He seems almost too good to be true. And we're not good at optimism. At least I'm generally not.
We're still riding that high, though.
And we will. And we will continue to do that. But Bears fans will be real quick to say, are we falling for the banana in the tailpipe again? Are we getting? But I think the longer we can hold that off, and the more that we can buy a little bit of belief that this time it's different, might we end up feeling like suckers? Yeah. But if we can't still put ourselves out there, what's the point of being a fan?
Instead of stacking all of the decisions on top of each other like a messy locker, put them into individual cubbyholes for a second.
Okay.
The Bears got the top candidate in the coaching cycle. They told you why. We got to see the agent representing that coach tell you that their process was the best in the league. And the next cubbyhole is the decision they made regarding retaining or at least not doing anything when it came to the GM's contract. And the next cubbyhole is firing a head coach midseason for the first time in franchise history. And perhaps that 5-week start did lead to this result. When you start to separate them out, then you can see that there actually has been a pattern of change that has been occurring.
You know what it feels like to me that is a bit foreign? Especially, it feels normal. Like, usually the Bears are so abnormal and so weird. Listening to the way Rick describes it, in these very plain terms, it just seems normal.
a lot of the best processes should be boring. It should be normal.
We don't live in a normal world. We live in a toxic, obsessed world.
That's true. And this is the Bears. So it's like funhouse mirrors half the time. And you never know why they're doing what they do. And they don't really know what they're doing or why they're doing it.
It's
like they have a better idea of what they're doing and why they're doing it now than they ever have. As Rick Smith pointed out, they had a vision that made sense to him.
And when you consider the reactions, the Bears made the proactive move in hiring Ben Johnson. Look at all of the reactionary moves that happened in the NFL after that. Look at what happened. Jacksonville fires Duval. Their GM. You start to see all the other dominoes fall when it came to...
No, that's the
real
one.
When it came
one.
To the head coaching and GM decisions that were made. Then you get the admission of whether or not the Raiders were really in on Ben Johnson, or so they say. That it led to more transparency, it led to more decisions being made, it led to everybody else reacting because of what the Bears did.
To have not screwed it up, we didn't find out like years later that Ben Johnson, after going to the Raiders, says, you know, I really wanted the Bears job. They just sort of dropped the ball, or they didn't want to talk to me, or things didn't work out, or the timing didn't work out, where everybody got out of their own way.
Did you hear the other part that Rick Smith said about how some coaches don't have a choice?
Yes.
We need to pay more attention to that. But we need to pay more attention to that part.
Well, that's also what I mean by certain jobs.
And the windows closing quickly.
Certain jobs are only going to attract certain kinds of candidates. And I was very concerned that Ryan Poles being in the last year, or maybe he's not, who knows?
Reportedly
being on his last year, which, as Kevin Warren defined as a lifetime, was not an impediment to Johnson wanting this job. Or maybe it was an attribute. I don't know.
The actions are mirroring the, not just words, but the reactions from the rest of the league. That's when you know it's good. This is all they could do right now. All they could do right now is hire the best candidate. And they did. So they did everything they were supposed to do in that moment.
And then there'll be another opportunity to do the thing that they can do right then. We'll see if they do it then.
Let them hire the best staff. And we were just told in that interview that when it comes to roster decisions, he's going to have a big input.
It's the roster that he needs to make his team work.
Yep. Otherwise, he wouldn't have taken the job.
Bernstein and Harris.
Jarrett Payton.
Marshall, you've done a really, really good job.
Middays 10 till 2.
You guys have become the perfect match, man. It is so much fun to listen to.
Caleb Williams, who's looking for his first career game-winning drive to end his first season. It'll come down to Cairo Santos from 51 yards. Good snap. Good hold. The kick on the way by Santos, and it is good!
That was good. Yeah. And so far, so good. We haven't had anybody falling on their face at the coordinator press conferences.
But now we go to someone who was partly responsible for a 5-12 season.
Indeed. And yet, he was also believed to be better than any of the other alternatives for them as special teams coordinator. Richard Hightower worked for Matt Eberflus, and now he works for Ben Johnson. And he re-met the media today, starting with talking about being retained in his job by the new guy.
This is my third time with a first-time head coach. So, obviously, when I came back to this regime, that was with a first-time head coach. My time in San Francisco helping, you know, Kyle Shanahan as a first-time head coach, getting that program turned around. I think I could be an asset. And the main thing is they feel I could be an asset, which I'm honored, you know, to obviously George, you know, Kevin Warren, Ryan Poles, and Ben for believing in me, and I can't wait to help, you know, onboard this process. When I sat down with Ben, it was clearly evident from the get-go that this was someone that I wanted to work with and somebody I wanted to work for and be a part of his staff. You know, the players here really enjoy the players here, really enjoy hearing Ben's vision. He was clear and concise from the get-go, and very transparent about everything that was occurring. So his passion for special teams really was exciting to me. And not only for special teams, but connecting all three phases together, playing complementary football was just really excited to me. So I'm excited to be back and help these guys reach the next level.
Did you expect to be back?
Well, in this business, you never, ever know. I'm on a one-day contract. That's how I look at everything. And I've been looking at it for that for, 19 years now, or what is coming up on, I think. I lose track of it. Maybe 18, 19, 20 years. I'm thinking on a one-day contract because I'm trying to get better every day, and I'm trying to help our players get better every day. So I don't think about where I'm going to be, any of that stuff. I just put my best foot forward, one foot in front of the other, and try to make people around me better.
But will he be where his feet are? I don't think you can be. Today, that I think that was a mandatory work-in for all of the coordinators to mention about be where your feet are.
We're all where our feet are, unless...
Unless you lose your feet.
Yes.
Because that happens. Sometimes your feet are gone.
I'm yes.
And then you're not where your feet are.
Yeah.
It's bad for you.
Unless you take them with you. I don't know how that would work, though.
Well, that's the scouting term, right? Forgets his feet sometimes, is able to bring his feet with him and carry his pads well and all that. But okay, so we got close to that cliche. I can do without the complimentary football.
But I understand why you don't like complimentary football.
Just outscore the team by a lot, however you got to do it.
But complimentary football is a thing.
No. No, complimentary. It's usually a defensive coach talks about complimentary football.
Yeah,
and you almost always hear that from a defensive coach. It's one of these things that means nothing. Obviously, all phases in football matter, but you don't play defense for your special teams or play offense for your defense. The offense should do whatever it can to score as many points as it can, regardless of what anybody else is doing. If complimentary football means the defense doesn't allow any yards, great. It's just an after-the-fact thing where people like to give credit to everybody else. But, okay. So he won't answer, did you expect to be back? That's a simple yes or no answer. Yes, no, or I don't know.
One-day contract, baby.
Okay. But nobody actually feels that way. People know how long their contracts are. So how does he address now the current state of accountability for special teams?
My role in that is what it's always been. And in the special teams room, they're held to the highest standard, and they want to be pushed, and they're held accountable. And I love them. I put my arm around them, but I put my foot up there behind when I need to. So that's the real peek behind the curtain of what goes on in the special teams room. And a credit to those guys that they continue to play at a high level week in and week out, even with anything. You know, you're always going to have adversity, you know, but those guys in the special teams room rose to the challenge every week and were competitive as they could be. So they get held extremely accountable, and they know that. And really, Mark, that's all I know. My father, you know, God rest his soul, but he held me accountable to everything that I said I was going to do as a man, and said that if you say you're going to do something, do it. If people expect something, then you need to demand it. And you need to step to the occasion when you say you're going to do something and be accountable for your actions. So really, that's all I know. So that's a great question, but that's all I know.
Okay.
Satisfied with that answer?
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's a special teams coach. I'm not going to get too crazy about a special teams
coach. That's what I asked you because I want to make sure that I'm not tripping by just being like, that's fine.
No, I want to drill down when we can at some point. You still had some open items on Declan Doyle.
Are they open items?
I don't know. You seem to have more reservations than I do.
It's not reservation. It's just I realize that our evaluation of him is going to take longer than an ordinary coordinator's evaluation because what is he doing?
We don't know.
That's my point. And as long as the Bears are scoring more points than everybody else, it's not really going to matter, is it?
No, it's not his offense. It's not his vision. He clearly is a teaching assistant to the professor.
TA.
You know what I mean? Like, he maybe will, you know, teach a workshop lab here and there and grade some papers.
Yeah, he's the hand-picked apprentice because this is a guy who it seems like, you know, obviously Ben Johnson was a tight ends coach as well, young guy, and
rose up pretty quick and probably is looking at Declan Doyle and saying, I wish someone would have done this for me.
Fine.
I'm going to bring you along.
I'm really not that worried about it. He does sound young, and I agree. He's a TA. This is the professor has, or it's like a law clerk where somebody will earn that opportunity to go function under the person who's actually making all the judgments and the decisions.
Yeah, his role is important because that's part of the organization of how they do things, and he's running practice or the offensive part of practice. So I think all those things need to be taken into consideration, but we won't know until they hit the practice field.
Dan Bernstein.
Eventually, they stop growing.
Marshall Harris.
I've stopped growing physically, but not mentally, I hope.
That's a lovely sentiment.
Yeah.
Of course, we're all trying.
I'm just here to grow with you guys.
The Bernstein and Harris Show.
At our place, we're really trying to grow the man.
Middays, 10 till 2.
This guy's been one of the better closers in the game. He was a setup man last year, and they needed to address this bullpen. And there, as I said, There are a couple other veterans out there like Ryan Stanek and David Robertson that they've had conversations with. So I don't think they're done yet.
Cubs have a closer. That was Bruce Levine speculating as what they might do. And they were very open about the fact that they were going to be pursuing more bullpen help. And they got a 36-year-old who induces a lot of ground balls. Some of the stuff may be eroding around the edges a little bit. So I got a little bit of concern with Ryan Pressly. We know how good he's really been. And we also know there's a high level of variance in veteran relievers, no matter what. Or, you know, any relievers is a high level of variance. But you hope that some of the whiff rate drop can at least pop back up for a year. It's just for a year. So this is a go-for-it year. And I think that it makes sense to take a flyer on it. I don't think it's any guarantee. I am a little concerned about his age and what that means for erosion and injury risk. But go ahead. Anyways, he'll be better than Hector Neris, right?
Well, yeah. Hector Neris, you knew you were getting a mixed bag there with results that you couldn't quite predict accurately. And it played out that way. He was good sometimes.
But heart attack, Hector!
But he was bad a lot of times, and you can't have that kind of inconsistency in the back of your bullpen. That's the bottom line. I'll be interested to see if he is a straight-up closer for the Cubs or if we're going to a high-leverage situation where he would just kind of be the guy.
I think define closer however you want.
Oh, okay.
I use the term interchangeably, but I don't imagine he's going to be Bobby Thigpen. I don't imagine his entire job is going to only be ninth inning. I think he's an out-getter.
But
he's an important out-getter, and it might be the fifth.
But that's the role he served before the acquisition of Josh Hader for the Astros. I mean, he pitched the final out of the 22 World Series, last time they won the World Series. So, like,
yeah, he absolutely is. He can do
his save totals 49, 43, 56 before last year. Or, no, I'm sorry. That is not the right stat. My bad. 26, 33, 31 the last 3 years. And then he had 4 saves last year, of course, pitching behind Josh Hader, or I guess in front, technically, of Josh Hader as a setup man. It's a good look. My whole belief and philosophy on bullpen, just get as many hard throwing arms as you can and sort it out, and you probably have to make some adjustments throughout the season of who does what, but at least you've got bullets to fire.
Yeah, and I know that there are some guys of a certain age and a certain generation who want to know their routine, who say, I'm the guy that does this. And if you want to go back to Ned Yost managing, and he would declare, you're my seventh inning guy, and you're my eighth inning guy, you're my ninth inning guy. The truth is, the most important outs of a game, when they occur, is often out of your control. And that's one of the hardest things about modern managing, is being able to have your high leverage relief arms prepared enough for those situations, warm enough for those situations where you're not abusing them, you're not dry firing them, and you're making sure at the end of a season, especially an older reliever, is going to be at close enough to the peak of his powers.
I want to see what else is out there. I want to see what else they're going to do.
Keep going.
They've got to add more. It's not enough. Because what we are realizing by the nature of the deals that they have made so far, specifically the Tucker and knowing that he's going to become a free agent in the season, it is a one-year deal. This is them shooting their one-year shot and say, hey, we can get lucky
have a great year, plus other guys have down years on other teams, guys get hurt. We have to be ready to pounce on an opportunity to go as far into the playoffs as possible. But first, before you do that, you got to win more than 83 games to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, taking advantage of an Astros sell-off and maybe a turn of their ownership desires to say, okay,
83.
Grab some guys off of there. The 630 is not happy. So the Cubs are doing bungled, if half-measured deals. Trash. Our new closer throws 93.8-mile-an-hour fastball. That's lame. Read the room. Well, no, that's not the kind of pitcher he is. He's not a 100-mile-an-hour thrower. He's a ground ball inducer. There will be balls in play. The good news is you have one of the best defenders at his position, ideally now healthy. You've got a Gold Glover at second, and that's the point. If he wants to hit the ball, or if he wants to induce ground balls, we'll see. You know, Matt Shaw can field his position if he ends up winning that job.
Speaking of that job, so you think Bregman's off the table?
It sure seems like it, right? It seems like the Cubs are being used as leverage for Bregman to stay in Houston. Now, the other name you should also realize might be playing infield for the Cubs or outfield is Vidal Brujan. And the fact that they now aren't going to have either Nick Madrigal or Miles Mastroboni, and instead have a guy in Brujan whose only question is the stick, because he's going to get a lot of late-inning defensive responsibility. If he makes this team as their new 26th guy, Swiss Army knife, he's going to be out there.
But Brujan, and you say that the question is about the stick. That's always the question about that guy in that position.
That's fine, though. But
that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't have a problem with
but
that.
But he can run, and this was a top prospect. If they do unlock something with the swing, then you've got something real special. But I liked that move. I think Brujan could be a really valuable player. He can play every position but catcher defensively.
I think he's 26, I want to say. So, like, still young enough that he hasn't been completely hit his potential.
Oh, no, I mean, he's...
I'm just making the observation. But also, you have kind of a baseline understanding of what he does well right now. And it is mostly the...
It was a glove, man.
Yeah, the glove and the ability to go all over the place.
And the 630, who's talking about how this is trash, half-measured deals, it's a one-year arrangement right now. You got to understand that. If these deals feel half-measured, they are in for a year. They have not extended Jed Hoyer. We don't know where... This is it for this build. They are... especially because... After this year, there's going to be this season, there's next season, and then there's going to be no baseball. All teams are planning. Don't forget, so many of these moves are designed to work around the presumption of a long work stoppage.
Long work stoppage.
There's going to be a lockout. The owners are going to try to get a salary cap slapped onto this thing. Both sides are going to go to the mattresses on this one. So I can't tell you what 2026 is going to bring. But what the Cubs are saying is, here's Kyle Tucker, and here's going to be some representative bullpen arms.
And let's introduce you to Matt Shaw.
And maybe.
Probably.
And then you'll see if you can beat the Dodgers in a short series, which is possible because variance rules everything. In a short series, anybody can win.
Yeah, their job right now, front office, because when you don't extend your front office, people are sweating a little bit, is get it done now. So they have to go out and put themselves in the very best position to compete. And I don't know that you could say they've done that the last few years.
No, they certainly absolutely haven't. They haven't wanted to. And they've been upfront about, essentially,
we need career years from everybody.
Right, we need people to overperform because we're not paying people to be who they are normally. So going out and getting Tucker was a big deal, but they're not going to pay him $500 million when his contract
you
is
sure
up.
Sure about that?
Yes.
Yeah, I was being facetious.
I'm sure you're sure about it too.
We look him, like I said, you know, he's never been. Last 2 years has never been in position to be as healthy as he is right now coming into training camp, and I expect him to be ready to contribute to this team. We as an organization going to be open to anything that comes our way, but Zach is part of this team, and I'm looking forward to seeing him in training camp.
That was AK before the season talking about Zach LaVine. They tried to trade him last year. Things got kind of ugly between Zach LaVine and Billy Donovan. Then don't forget that when Zach went out, all of a sudden Coby White began to arrive and really asserted himself. And now Zach LaVine may be having the best season he's had as a Bull, absolutely at the top of his game. And it's increasingly likely that he's going to be traded.
Not a given, though. Not a given.
Not a given. But it's been a minute since somebody who is that, not just accomplished, but playing this well has been dealt.
And I'll put that into context when you say playing this well, because people will be like, well, he's only averaging 24 points a game. He's averaged more than that four different times in his career, right? But the efficiency, my goodness, 51.1% from the field, career high. 44.6% from three. That is beyond a career high. And he's doing it at such a high level when you talk about the fact that he's taking care of the basketball, not at the greatest rate, but still sharing. We saw it in the Nuggets game, right? He comes out playmaker for the first quarter. And then he decided later on, I'll turn up the scoring when needed. He's just playing a better brand of team basketball because Billy Donovan is now truly running an offense that fits him.
So the people are raising some possible comps here. And Layla, I think you said that the comp would be Chris Bryant.
I thought so. Just when I'm thinking successful, like not necessarily you're playing at your best, because when Chris Bryant was traded in 2021, he was not.
Right.
But that's what makes this argument so compelling. Chris Bryant was decorated, though, Rookie of the Year MVP.
But I'm trying to think somebody at the top of their game.
I would argue it's Butler. Jimmy Butler was a three-time All-Star when they traded.
And that
was
but he wasn't with a max contract like LaVine.
Correct.
And he hadn't earned it yet.
And it wasn't mid-season deadline. It was draft night. It wasn't like pick him up and send him out like right after he just played a terrific game kind of thing. So it didn't feel quite as abrupt. And we also knew that there were all sorts of issues.
Well, it's Jimmy Butler. So yeah, there's probably going to be issues.
The coach who wanted him was at the time Tom Thibodeau.
Help me remember when the Blackhawks traded for Chris Chelios. That was Dennis Savard. I don't remember exactly when it occurred, but that was
1990.
Was that peak Savard or close to peak? Because I remember that being a thing. That was one-to-one, like one of those weird star-for-star deals that probably, I don't know if it was believed to have been a good trade for both teams or not. But, yeah, and Chris Sale.
Wildly pivotal for the franchise.
Yeah.
In both respects.
Oh, enormous, yes. Yes. So it's not, and by the way, this is the first person said Greg Maddox, and this other person, there's a problem in the 815 today. The other person says Greg Maddox. He wasn't traded. They just stopped negotiating with him.
I like what the retort
And then he signed
was,
with the Braves, right?
That it was worse.
I remember.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
For both Greg Maddox and Greg Maddox.
Because the superstation I had to watch changed. Went from WGN to TBS. To watch Greg Maddox starts.
Hey, in all defense, I have typed things, and as I hit send, they change automatically whether or not I
That's the new Apple.
Yeah, you've had some winners.
I'm just like, this isn't even on my phone. Like, what? Why? So going back to things that don't bother me, which is interesting sports topics like this, Roquan Smith was brought up, but at the time, not as decorated.
Yeah, Roquan Smith isn't on billboards and the sides of buses.
So do you need them when you're getting paid when he's getting paid at his position? Yeah, do you need that?
I think your footprint in the city to be a mid-season trade of somebody who has established themselves as a star player for a major team in the city to for somebody to move off of that deal midstream doesn't happen all that often.
You can argue the reason this does fit in with the Bryant or any of the others that were traded from the Cubs.
Rizzo is, and Baez?
Yeah, is because it was time.
Right.
And so when he gets traded, everyone will say it was time. And then 5 years from now, they'll look back at the trade and be like, it was definitely time. It's different when it's not, like you said, star for star. That's there won't be any shockwaves from Zach LaVine being traded.
Chris Sale came to mind for me.
This is a good one from the 708. Quintana to the Cubs after the All-Star break.
Ah, yes.
That was big.
It was, but Quintana wasn't as dominating relative to the league, I think, as Zach LaVine is. Not that Quintana was perhaps one of the most sought-after trade pieces at the time, but I don't know that he was at the top of his powers that year.
Well, we just talked about him yesterday, but Craig Kimbrell being traded, that was supposed to be a thing. It just didn't pan out the way that the White Sox intended it to pan out because they probably used him incorrectly.
You know, this is a good name, too. Bill Madlock. That's not a bad name because he had won a couple of batting titles back when we that was a big deal to win batting titles.
That's still a big deal to me.
Still a big
deal. And I remember, I don't remember this specifically. I remember the trade. I definitely remember the trade because, you know, baseball card collectors, you know, that was, you just knew. This is hysterical. It says, during the advent of free agency following 1976, Madlock demanded a multi-year contract with an annual salary of $200,000, but was rejected by team owner Philip K. Wrigley, who then announced that Madlock would be traded, quote, to anyone foolish enough to want him.
Wow.
Shame.
Way to undermine your leverage there, Phil. Way to go, Phil. That's not how you do it, bruh. He said, in what was considered one of the five worst trades in Chicago Cubs history, Madlock and Rob Sparing were dealt to the San Francisco Giants for Bobby Mercer, Steve Ontiveros, and minor league right-handed pitcher Andy Mulestock.
Dan, our friend Jeff had a couple. Reggie Theus.
Yeah, was he traded to the Kansas City Kings?
Yikes.
This is really testing some memory here.
Yeah, it's beyond my memory, some of these names that are coming up. I mean,
he also submitted Elton Brand.
Oh.
That's not bad.
Elton Brand, Elton Brand was the dude. He was Mr. 20 and 10, right?
Yeah, he was co-rookie of the year. But that was the trade that out of nowhere, Tim Floyd just told me about.
Yeah, so the 83-84
season. That's a heck of a story.
It was so strange because he said something to me. We were at the Berto Center, and he's like, "Yeah, give me a call on your way home." So I call him in his office.
Done.
And he's like, "Hey, you want to sound smart? You're the Shell answer man. You're always trying to sound smart." That's what he used to call me.
What did he call you?
The Shell answer man. Because somebody would ask him a question. He goes, don't ask me. Ask the Shell answer man over there. He's the guy who knows everything. So he said, hey, you want to sound smart? I'm like, I always want to sound smart. He's like, you might want to speculate we're going to make a huge trade. I said, okay. Really? He goes, yeah, just speculate. You know, speculate maybe the Bulls are going to do something nobody sees coming.
Who knew that ended up being a term of endearment?
I don't know. He was probably drunk. You never know.
He gave you the gift that all reporters yeah. love to have.
Yeah, Breaking news.
Yeah, out of nowhere, right? So, yeah, Reggie Theus traded to the Kansas City Kings for Steve Johnson.
In an all-star season, mind you.
Yep, and 3 second-round draft picks because Kevin Lockery decided to bench him for the first half of the 83-84 season. Now, that's right. It saddened many Chicago fans. It indirectly freed up a spot for a shooting guard. The next draft, they needed a shooting guard.
Michael Jordan.
And they took one.
So and it worked
He was
out.
Not traded.
Right. They indeed, like, wait a sec, we need a shooting guard? We don't need, they'll take Sam Bowie and Akeem. And okay, we're good. We'll
that's
take
crazy.
That's, yep.
A few people have said Maglio.
Okay.
I mean, if we're going to go Sox route, I still argue Sale more than Maglio, maybe. But I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm trying to remember how good Maglio was at the time.
Mags was pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, I know he was pretty good, but I wanted...
But was he like Sale good at the time?
Yeah, no. That's what I'm
at
saying.
At the time?
Chris Sale was like a top five pitcher in the game when they traded him.
So that
you could have argued that the year Kluber won the Cy Young.
I think part of the issue with this question, and not an issue, that's wrong. It's very open-ended, and there's the criteria is very...
It's nebulous, but I do think it's an interesting question about somebody... If we set the criteria at somebody who is already really good and important on the team having a good year for that team,
playing their best game.
Traded in the season. Reggie Theus is a good name.
No, that's, look, long before, what, Hang Time?
That's how I knew about Reggie Theus.
Yeah, Hang Time was a Saturday morning.
I wasn't old enough to know the game.
Featuring Anthony Anderson.
Reggie was one of our, on the Boers and Bernstein show, Reggie was one of our regular weekly basketball analysts.
Oh, okay.
He was part of our show. Yeah, he was hilarious. He's coaching.
He's coaching in California, isn't he?
I thought it was.
California Dreams.
It's an HBCU, I think he's coaching.
They say because, by the belt.
Because they had a game at Tulane that Jason was covering. Bethune-Cookman. And they had a game at Tulane, and Jason sent me a picture of Reggie Theus, but from behind. And he said, "Who is this? You get three guesses." I got it instantly.
Aww.
Just because it was, you know, Reg. That man's good looking no matter how you look at him.
It's the reason he was on TV shows. Wasn't he himself on that show too?
No, he played coach something.
He was a coach, but I'm saying wasn't
he? No, he wasn't Reggie Theus, I don't think.
Yeah, here in the title, Rush Street Reggie for a reason. Correct, 708.
Wait.
Coach Bill Fuller.
There it is. They're asking, is Patrick Kane in the convo? No.
It wasn't at the height of his powers.
Right.
So that is criteria, height of your powers.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Having your best year.
Yeah, and part of the question I had, too, is if right now, currently, is Zach LaVine the best player in all of Chicago sports? I think you have Jalen Johnson. I think you have Kyle Tucker. But is he right now the best player in Chicago sports?
Not the most famous, not the most powerful.
Just the best.
Just the best right now.
Kyle Tucker's the best.
Yeah.
Well, I would argue maybe Bedard.
He's still got some growing to do in terms of production.
Although
that goal last night.
Oh, dude, that goal last night.
That goal last night.
Come on.
I was like, wait, did he just score?
Come on. And that was no fluke either. That was no fluke. That didn't hit a shin pad. He put that in a spot barely bigger than the puck. That's ridiculous. That's like that video of Sidney Crosby shooting at the pucks on the top of the dasher boards when they made a pyramid of the pucks and Sid the Kid was firing and knocking off each layer of pucks off the pyramid. That's that stuff. That's wild. But so, okay, yeah, Zach LaVine right now at this very moment.
We got Hockey Dan for a second.
I mean, can you say Kyle Tucker if he's never played a game here?
Sure.
Yes, because of his established career already.
And obviously Caleb Williams is the biggest, most powerful, most important, but he's not the best.
He's not at the height of his powers.
No, clearly not.
You would hope not.
He's not at the height of his power.
I'm saying that
would be disappointing if he was at the height of his powers.
He's at the height of his powers now. We panic. We panic a lot.
Yeah.
Listen. Like run around with your hands in the air like SpongeBob.
And I guess the first bear objectively is Jalen Johnson. That's your guy who's Pro Bowl, all pro, the best at his
position. One of the top 100 players in the NFL, though.
No. But
At least not by his peers.
He told you about the validity of that survey. You know how I feel about accurate sample gathering.
Well, you're going to feel badly about a lot of things that go on in this particular society.
You don't say. Could that be the reason I am the way I am?
Yeah, probably. I got you.
773 arguing Shota is in the convo right now.
Oh.
I'll take that under advisement. Actually, given his resume, that is fair. Who said Andrew Vaughn?
Oh, they're trolling us now?
Stop
they're trolling it. Us? Okay, they're trolling us. See how quickly it goes?
No, you know what? Were we still wanting to do this the next segment?
And this is wrong. What about Sammy Sosa when the Sox traded him? Wasn't he? No, 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 no. That was the George Bell
upset.
Trade.
Yeah,
I
love George Bell.
And Sammy was just this enticing mass of traits and skills, and he was like a wild colt at that point.
So the Bears would have drafted him.
Enticing mass of traits and skills.
That's Bears.
And for a long time, it was White Sox. You know, for years, that was Kenny Williams looking athletic, toolsy.
Yeah.
Always athletic, toolsy. Like, he loved the guys who were. For years, we used to joke about it when we'd play the South Bend White Sox, and they'd get off the bus, and it was like a basketball team. because everybody was like 6'4" and these V-shaped backs, and they'd stand there in the batter's box. Nobody had better bodies than a lot of these White Sox minor league teams. They just couldn't play.
Someone brought up Nomar Garciaparra, and I was like,
Instagram
that was,
team?
He was great, but he didn't do, right?
No, they traded for him.
No, I thought about that. I thought about Nomar being traded to here at the height of his power.
Yeah, but that's that right. That's him coming here, not leaving.
But I did think about it, too. I did.
What about the Wilbur Marshall trade?
That was a free... He was a free agent.
I thought he was traded.
I think they got compensatory picks, but I think that was an early, like, they used to call it Plan B free agency, and then he left for Washington.
Also, Ordóñez wasn't traded. He just stopped playing.
Yeah, I didn't think he was traded either.
He was hurt, and then he signed with Detroit and had monster seasons for another team in the division.
Yeah, he was good in Detroit.
I remember that part.
Thanks for that update, Robbie.
I was at that game where he hit the home run to send us to the World Series. So,
in your
thank you,
Mackinac Island shirt.
That's not bad. Lamar Hoyt to the Padres. That's not bad. That was Lamar Hoyt for Tim Lawlor, Luis Salazar, and a very young, undersized shortstop prospect named Ozzie Guillen.
Ozzie is getting a bobblehead this year.
Oh.
I found out from it has to be a talking bobblehead.
It's got
to
be a talking bobblehead.
Those sound expensive.
Look, go get it, baby.
You hit the button and it just doesn't shut up and you can't
please
turn it off.
Please let the caption be go get it, baby.
You have to take the batteries out to make it stop talking. That's like me. I want a bobblehead of his grandkid.
Which one?
The one that looks like the most Guillen thing that ever Guillened. Oso. Have you seen this baby?
Hold on, let me go look.
Have you seen Oso?
Well, he looks like he's more like 4.
Is that how old he is?
I think he's like 2 or 3.
Well, all I know is it's the most adorable. It's like if you distilled essence of Guillen down to its the very nature of its being.
He had a heck of a World Baseball Classic.
And then you just sort of grew it somewhere in a lab.
So I could see what you're saying.
Right?
The Guillen genes are strong, is what Dan is trying to say.
Yes, I just imagine his sounds exactly like Ozzy. He
took the mic in one of the press conferences.
Oso did?
Yeah, it was adorable.
Yeah, he should be more famous, I think.
We can make that happen.
He absolutely is underpublicized and underutilized as a symbol of Chicago.
Pippen to Houston. Was it late?
No,
powers.
That was late. That was the whole, you know, the sign and trade for Roy Rogers, I think, is what that was.
They don't talk about the Scottie Pippen times in Houston.
Nor should they. I completely understand.
Yeah, Roy Rogers in a second.
Roy Rogers and
a
second.
What about Stanks?
Fair question.
There's a lot of people with some weighing in on some things that Julius Peppers. No, that was a free agent signing.
Well, I had forgotten what ended Maglio's time here, so that's fair.
No, we all do that. 312-644-6767. If you have something to add to this conversation, does it sound like it's Super Bowl week before the Super Bowl week? You bet it does.
Way to sell, Dan.
Here on Sports Radio 670, The Score.